From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
That's my wind imitation.
I see, okay.
Sorry about that. Because we're going to talk about wind, okay. Joel, and specifically antennas and wind.
Well, that's a relief.
Well, you know, earlier this summer, we had a big storm blow through here in Connecticut.
Indeed.
And it snapped my dipole. I was very surprised because I'm using some pretty tough wire, and it snapped one leg of my dipole and had to go out and resolder it and everything. So let's talk about antennas and wind.
Okay. They do have an issue with that. One of our greatest challenges as hams is keeping our antennas where we want them or where we left them. And another one is knowing if it didn't have, you know, you can break an antenna. You can keep using it for months if you don't notice it.
And yeah, you would say, never know, yes.
These guys, my signal reports don't seem to be quite as high as they used to be. I wonder if the propagation is getting even worse. And there's an old amateur radio saying that if your antenna is still up, you didn't make it big enough. That's sort of
yes.
The other side of it. So you can't win with that one, I guess. This is particularly true of wire antennas, casually supported by halyards and trees, which is what I tend to do, even though I know it's not the best way to do it.
I do it that way. Yeah.
Well, a third of them get stuck in the tree, in my
yes.
experience. And I've lived in this house for 35 years now, I guess, and there are few trees that don't have extraneous pieces of rope hanging from various connections. And some of them, though, still work to this day from the original 35 years ago kind of thing. I can still move the halyards through, but they tend to grow around.
Yes, they do. In my case, the dipole that snapped recently in the wind, part of what caused it to snap, in fact, a substantial part of it, was the fact that the tree it was anchored to was just whipping back and forth and back and forth, and it finally just proved to be too much.
Well, that's a very common problem for people who install antennas the way we do, because
yes.
if in the ideal case, if there were no distance between the trees and the wind hit both of them at the same time, they'd both move in the same direction at the same time, and there would be no additional strain on the wire. The problem is, this is my theory at least, as the wind comes, it first strikes one tree, and then, I don't know what the speed of the wind is, I guess, depending on how fast the wind is blowing, mm-hmm. it takes some time to get to the next tree. By the time it gets to the next tree, pressure is off on the first tree, and the first tree is swinging back the other way, and that's a big factor in doing it. So the better way to do it that we all know, and it's just more trouble, is to have some kind of a pulley arrangement, and then instead of tying off the halyard, have a weight at the bottom so that the halyard can actually move with the tree. So the tree moves under the halyard, sort of, rather than having the tree pull on the halyard.
Oh, so it pulls the weight up and down,
exactly,
is what you're saying.
Exactly right.
Okay.
You have to do this carefully. You have to have a kind of weight so that the weight doesn't fall off and then the whole thing goes flying. you can have problems with that, too. And the other thing is you have to make sure that your antennas are strong enough. Now, one thing, you mentioned soldering your antenna wire. Now, I've found if I have a soldered connection in the antenna's mechanical path, that is the first place it'll break because it's not flexible.
Yes, I've run into that before. You're absolutely right.
So this can happen even in an antenna that hasn't broken yet. It can happen at the feed point.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason, I use a structure at the center insulator in which the wire is wrapped around the insulator and clamped, and then the connection occurs outside of the mechanical path, if that makes any sense. I actually wrote an article about that. There's a picture of it if somebody can find it. So the solder connection is not within the mechanical strength path of the antenna wire. That makes a big difference. Also, I use strong wire. I tend to use stranded copper weld wire. There's a particular one I like that's insulated as well. Fairly heavy. I use number 13 typically. This can hold up a medium-sized tree. I mean, it's pretty tough stuff. Now, that doesn't keep other things from breaking in the system. But, you know, the halyards can break and other things. And the other thing that's important to do is make sure you have a safety line on the antenna side of the halyard, so if the antenna does break, you don't have to reshoot the halyard. You can reuse the halyard almost without any effort.
I never thought of that. Seriously,
yeah.
I never thought that. Never occurred to me.
Well, and the other thing, you know, it doesn't even have to be It doesn't have to be anywhere near as thick as the halyard because there's not any strain on it. You just have to use that. Just has to be strong enough to be able to pull the halyard through, assuming the halyard hasn't grown into the tree.
Right, right.
So it's got that problem. But
now, when you're saying halyard, is that a Northeast expression for rope? Is that what you...
I'm sorry. It's a sailing expression, or it started as a sailing expression, I guess I should say. And it's short British for haul yard.
Oh, as in to haul up or haul something.
Haul, yes. A yard. And the old square riggers, the yard was the cross piece across the mast that held the top of the sail. And you hauled that up the mast with a haul yard or halyard. And most people that use ropes to pull antennas up into trees call them antenna halyards. That's at least I do. I guess I thought that wasn't fairly common.
No, I think you're strange.
Well, I know I'm strange, but that doesn't mean the word is strange. Anyway, that's what I mean by halyard, is a
rope.
A rope that pulls up an antenna or sail or whatever.
Well, now thinking of wind, though, yeah. Does that impact the selection of the rope or halyard, as you prefer, that you're going to use in that application?
I think it does, and in a couple of ways. And not only the halyard, but the place that it's secured.
Ah.
Because if you think about it, the big thing that kills halyards, in my experience, is abrasion. If the tree is moving back and forth under the halyard,
yes,
you'll wear away the material of the halyard and it'll snap at the point where it goes over the tree. Now, what causes that to happen? Let's say you have the halyard going over the tree and you have it secured on the ground to some other tree. Well, then when this tree that it's over moves, it moves and the halyard doesn't move, so that's what gives mm-hmm. you the abrasion. So I always make it a point to bring the halyard down the same tree and tie it to the tree that it's going over so that if it moves, the halyard moves with the tree, and I think that's much better. And the other thing is the material. Nylon ropes are very good in that they stretch, which gives you a little mm-hmm. bit of a safety margin in that way, but they're very poor in terms of abrasion resistance, and they tend to not last as long in that kind of an application. So I tend to use what's in the marine industry is called yacht braid. In fact, I get serious yacht braid from my marine dealer, which has an outer jacket of, almost like coax cable, has an outer jacket of mm-hmm. UV-resistant material that is very strong and very abrasion-resistant, and an inner conductor, if you will, of most of the diameter that is very strong and not designed to stretch. The nature of halyards is that they wear at a specific spot,
yes,
which is where they go over the branch of the tree.
Of course.
So if you lower the halyard down and move it a foot, you move it to a different spot.
Well, that's a good idea.
The real serious way to do it is to turn it upside down and put the abraded end down at the bottom now instead of up at the top, and you can keep your eye on it. But you can only do that twice, whereas if you move it a foot or two, you can do that. Keep doing that until you run out of halyard.
Now, I'm using something very similar to what you described. I call it Dacron line, but you're right. There is an outside layer, an inside layer, and it's instructive to note that during that storm when we had hurricane winds, it was the wire in the dipole that snapped, not the Dacron line.
Yep.
So it's quite strong. I want to ask you about guying, but first let's hear from DX Engineering.
All right.
And we'll be back.
Every ham radio operator knows speed matters. Whether it's jumping in your truck during an emergency or staying up all night for lightning-quick contesting, seconds count. And there's nothing more painful than being off the air waiting for equipment to arrive. At DX Engineering, we know a thing or two about speed. You can count on us to provide the fastest shipping in the ham universe. How fast? You get same-day shipping on most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern Time. It's that fast. So that new rig, antenna, cable assembly, or replacement part you need will make it to your shack in plenty of time to work a remote DXCC entity or dominate the competition in the next contest. And the best part is DX Engineering offers free shipping for most orders over $99. Radio waves travel at the speed of light. Lucky for you, so does DX Engineering. Visit DXEngineering.com. That's DXEngineering.com.
And we're back, Joel, and as promised, I want to hear from you about guying, because I saw an incredible video of a vertical antenna, a monopole, as you call them.
Yep.
It was 43 feet tall, and it was in a 70-mile-per-hour wind, and whipping unlike anything I've ever seen before. I can't imagine how it survived, but clearly some guy wires would have helped that.
Guy wires are a good thing if you do it right. I mean, a large fraction of towers in particular are held up by guy wires, although some are self-supporting, some are supported by buildings and other things, but I think the majority are held up by guy wires. They can take all the force that would want to push the tower over, which is kind of handy. They're also particularly good if you're climbing the tower because even if you have a self-supporting tower that can hold itself up, if you have a couple hundred pounds of person hanging on one side, you'll have additional stress that perhaps the tower manufacturer hadn't planned on.
No.
So you got to be very careful, particularly when you're installing them, and good to use temporary guys until you get the real ones up there. But guys have to be strong enough to hold the tower up, or oftentimes the guy wires are what fails and the tower collapses. And the reason for that often is that critical piece of the guy wire is the part in the ground that's holding the end of it. That's where all the force goes. And unfortunately, it's very difficult to inspect that. So, you could have the best guy wire installation in the world, and eventually, if it's encased in concrete or whatever, the concrete starts to disintegrate, or the metal in the guy wire itself or the anchor starts to deteriorate and corrode, and eventually that nice guy wire looks like it's doing fine. It disappears into the concrete, but you really don't know what's happening in there. And if it lets go, the other two on the other side will pull the tower right over. So it can be a problem. And, towers have a lot of force on them and the antennas as well.
I'm thinking back to that video of the vertical antenna, and I'm thinking of folks out there that might be installing a vertical or maybe even homebrewing a vertical. Let's say out of 43 feet of PVC, something of that nature, or aluminum tubing. How would they go about attaching guy wires to something like that, and how many guy wires would they need? Just 3 points or what?
3 points is usually enough if they're all working. Putting up a structure like that is a little bit tricky. There are two choices. One is to put it together on the ground and then hoist it up, and you get some very funny forces involved in that, and oftentimes you find, especially if you just push it up from the bottom, for one thing, it gets very heavy very quickly as it starts to go up.
It certainly does.
And the other thing is, as it goes up, the forces and the weight of the structure tend to cause it to try to snap or bend. I've done that. So that's one way to do it. And the way to fix or to deal with that is to use your guy wires as part of the lifting process, particularly if you can get above it. If you have a roof, you can throw the guy wire over initially just to get the angles nicer so you're pulling up on it instead of pulling up against the base, particularly, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I've seen some very clever fixtures in which you start with a single 4 or 6 foot section, whatever. You push it up, and the structure holds that in place while you slide another one underneath it. You're dealing with a vertical the whole time, and it just kind of magically rises up. That can work very well if you have the whole kit and don't have other side stresses on it when you're doing it. You don't want to put the antenna loads on it till it's all installed and properly guided. Forces on even wire antennas, as you note, can be quite significant. I had a strange experience which has kind of left an imprint in my mind. One of my first antennas in the 70s, and when I lived in Massachusetts, I had a house that had a three-story back on it, and I had a 600-foot run going out the back of property. It's 2 acres in a fairly narrow lot. So obviously I had an end-fed wire running from the house out the back. And what I attached it to was I picked a trim piece on the top of a window in the back of the house and attached a fitting there like I guess it was designed to hold a clothesline up or something. Mm-hmm. I just screwed that into the back of the house, and it worked fine for years until all of a sudden I heard a shriek in the middle of the night. And my then 3-year-old daughter, who survived and is now 50-something or about 50, woke me up. I went in there, and I'd actually managed to pull the window out of her bedroom with this antenna. So that taught me a lesson, and which has to do with how I have my current antenna held up. So the end of my house is not holding up the antenna.
And a valuable lesson about wind loading.
Yes, indeed. Yes, absolutely right. So what I did, I realized that what had happened is that the window had been put in with nails going in the same direction as the antenna, and that they were had to be pulled out. There was no shear force against the side of a nail, which is much stronger. But as soon as I pulled the window back in and put some nails in where they should have been in the first place, and worked fine ever since. And that my daughter, as I say, has survived this long without any additional problem.
Well, you know, that does bear on the topic. I'm not trying to make a bad pun here, but of wind loading, especially as it applies to, well, say Yagi antennas on towers or rotators or clamped to one's chimney, something like that.
Yeah, and that's a big thing to take into account, and you really should know how much force you're applying to things, and then see if you think it makes sense to have the whatever you're holding it up deal with that force. My degrees are in electrical, not mechanical or civil engineering, which are really what you want for this topic. But if you look up about this sort of thing, you'll find that the wind force on an object is equal to the wind pressure, usually in pounds per square foot, times the effective surface area of the driven object in the direction of the wind. Now, the pressure is actually modified by air density and other factors, but is generally about 0.0026 times the velocity squared, where the velocity is in miles per hour. I hate doing these things without a blackboard. But
yeah.
But just to give you a reference point, so if you have an 80-mile-an-hour wind, which is fairly standard, that's about 16.6 pounds per square foot.
Well, that's significant.
Yeah. So if you have a 10-square-foot effective antenna, like some big Yagis are, that's 166 pounds of force against it. Now, but the thing you have to remember is you not only have force against the antenna, but you have the same wind is pushing against the area of the rotator, the area of the tower, the mast, anything else that's there. So pretty soon you're getting up to a fairly significant amount of force.
Definitely.
And whatever you have holding up the antenna has got to be able to withstand that. So that was obviously what I was up against with this window problem. Now, the other thing to remember is everybody talks about it at 80 miles an hour. Well, that's pretty high winds, but we've mostly, at least even here in Connecticut, which is not known for such things, we've had 100-mile-an-hour winds in my neighborhood. I've had some 100-foot trees go right over in our yard. It's kind of dramatic. In fact, I've got one now. If anybody wants one, they can come and take it out of my backwoods. But the wind pressure goes up with the square of the wind velocity. So if you know what the wind load is at 80 miles an hour, it is more than doubled at 115 miles an hour. So 80 miles an hour is an interesting number in the specs, but you have to consider what you're really going to deal with and figure out how much additional wind you may have to withstand and what the pressure is.
Yes, that's something to consider.
Now wire antennas are driven by the wind, but they have a very small area, and I think the small effective surface area keeps them from having a lot of force. But as we noted earlier, the force is usually due to the trees that they're attached to moving or whatever else they're attached to moving. So you have a kind of a different thing. So you have to look at the area of the tree, not the area of the wire, to see what's going to happen to get an idea. Some antennas are very straightforward. A solid metal UHF parabolic dish reflector has the effective area pretty much equal to about the area of the circle, or if it's a circular shape.
Yeah.
And, of course, it increases a little bit because it has additional drag going into the structure. So it's not always exactly what you'd think it was. Now, the thing to remember is the effective surface area is not generally the same as the actual area, but it's modified to consider the shape of the object by introducing a factor that takes into account both the projected frontal area and the drag as the wind continues past it. Wind force acts on structures in at least two ways. One is the direct force, which tries to move the object away from its location. We've been talking mostly about that. And this includes pulling the tree, pulling against the wire. And I had occasion to sit across from a ham at a dinner during the Maine State Convention in Lewiston a few years ago. He was relating how his 50-foot tower with HF Yagi had been attached to the side of his house by lag bolts and ended up on the ground one morning. And I said to myself, I think he had the same problem that I did with my nails, in that the lag bolts, the wind was pushing against it along the axis of the lag bolts, so it just had that little bit of wood in between among the threads, and it would have been so much better if he had a way to attach it so that the lag bolts went perpendicular to the force against the tower. Or what I did in my current installation, I have, it looks like the mast that I have is attached to the side of my house, but I have this vision of the side of my house coming off in a heavy wind. And so what I did is I actually have, rather than lag bolts, I have threaded rod going all the way into the attic. Inside the attic, I have a structure that they're bolted to, but more importantly, I have some tangs there that are used to attach guy wires, which go off in two different directions sort of 45 degrees apart and pick up structural frame members of the house. So instead of pulling the side of the house off, if the wind has to be strong enough to tip the house up over on its side, the whole house, I think.
I'd want to see that.
Yes, yeah. I don't want to see that, but I could imagine. But I could imagine, I think that I could have 300 pounds of force on the side of the antenna. I don't know what it would take to pull my house apart if it were just tied to the end of the house, but I would worry about having some of it, having all of this end up not only in my yard, but in my neighbor's yard, perhaps even on my neighbor's house, which would not be too
bad. That could be.
Yeah. In addition to direct sideways force, another consideration is the bending moment. This is having the force applied at a distance from where the force is resolved. The distance becomes a lever arm of sorts. So if you imagine a mass secured to a surface and then sticking out horizontally over free space, now imagine standing on the mass as it leaves the secured area. Your force initially will try to shear the end of the mast off from where it's attached. But if you walk out the mast, I'm not suggesting you really try this, just imagine it. If you walk out the mast towards the unsupported end, you'll be applying a bending moment to the mast. The bending moment in foot-pounds equals your weight times the distance. So when you're standing at the edge of the support, you have applied a 200-pound force to try to shear or snap off the unsupported section of mast. And, of course, if this is an antenna and you have a 20-foot mast above the rotator, as some people do, and have the antenna up there, you're providing a significant bending moment that's going to try to cause the mast to buckle. So you have to take that into account, too. That's a sort of a separate issue. It all adds up to the sideways force, but in addition, you have the potential of bending your mast with the antenna on the top of it over due to the force on that, due to the bending moment. So take that into account as well. The best arrangement, if you can do it, is to have the antenna just above the rotator on top of the tower or above the thrust bearing, especially if you have a pipe mast like mine. Everybody, of course, wants to be higher and higher and higher, and as you do that, as you go higher and higher above the top of the tower, you have less and less stuff holding it there, and the mast is taking the full brunt of the bending moment. So just keep that in mind also.
Well, do you have time for a question, Joel?
Sure.
Okay. Well, this one happens to be from Fred, KM6ASK. He's asking a question.
Get it.
Okay. I'm hoping that you can settle an issue I have with a friend. I just bought a new pickup, and I will be moving my multiband VHF UHF FM transceiver into it. My friend says that I can install the antenna on the edge of the bed behind the cab, because it doesn't matter as long as the top of the antenna is above the roof. In my opinion, that's incorrect. I say that the base of the antenna should be above the roof, and the entire antenna should be in the clear. What do you think, Joel?
Well, I certainly agree that having the antenna on top of the cab, preferably in the center, will work much better than having it partly hidden behind the cab. On the other hand, if you keep hitting garage doors and fast food drive-through overhangs, it may not work for very long. So there's kind of a balance you have to take here.
But in terms of radiation of the antenna, I mean, its pattern.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If it's in the center of the top of the cab, it will be omnidirectional pretty much. There'll be a little bit of a benefit possibly over the bed of the pickup, but by and large, it's going to be omnidirectional. If you have it on the rail behind the cab, it'll definitely favor going to the rear, but you will still have some radiation to the front. Now, here's the thing, what it really comes down to. And you're talking a VHF antenna, VHF propagation. Most of the time, if you're dealing with local repeaters in which you have a line-of-sight path, you need so little power to get from where you are to where the repeater is that you don't need much going in that direction. So you may find that even though the signal is down 10 or 20 dB towards the front, you still have enough to get into the repeater.
Mm-hmm.
I had a good antenna on my house, and I went for a couple of years not knowing that my 50-watt transmitter final amplifier stage had failed. I was actually putting out less than a watt, and I was still getting into all my repeaters. So, you know, I guess the point is it's a question of one would be better than the other, but is the one that's not as good enough for what you need and more likely to survive all these accidents? So what I would suggest doing is trying it. I have a magnetic mount dual band antenna that I think I paid $20 for some years ago. I don't know what they cost now, but they're not terribly expensive. And I would try it in different locations and see if it works well for you, well enough. Now, you will probably find that you get better quieting in the receiver when it's up on top of the cab if you're talking to a repeater in the front. But if you can hear the repeater okay and you can talk to people through the repeater with it on the bed rail in the back, maybe that's good enough. And
yeah,
if you put a full-size antenna there, it'll work somewhat better. And it wouldn't be a wasted effort because in my experience, a magnetic mount antenna is a handy thing to have. I use them as base station antennas. If I'm traveling, I plop it on the wood stove in the cabin that I'm renting, or on the top of a file cabinet in the office when my antenna falls down, or wherever I go. I mean, there's all kinds of things, emergency communication things. It will work much better than a handheld antenna, for example. So if you're providing communications from a shelter or something in an emergency, it'll be a great thing to have. So don't think of it as a waste of money. Think of it as a investment in something that can answer your question better than I could from here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Joel.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.